G'day everyone, welcome to the Genre Fiction Podcast. I am Jack Roney.
And I'm Harry Colfer.
Tonight we've got a very special guest who I'll intro very shortly. But I'm going to put you on the spot, Harry, just really quickly. I'm just going to segue into something different. You're also moonlighting as no giveaways or anything, no spoilers, but you're actually moonlighting as a particular celebrity chef. And the only thing I would say is if anyone wants to know about that, jump onto Harry Colfer's social media and check it out.
I think hashtag fake Gordon is the link.
All right, and we're just waiting for it to go viral, so we won't say any more about it. If you're curious, go and check it out on Harry Colfer's social media. It's an absolute ripper. Okay,
thank you.
Our special guest tonight, we are very privileged. I tell you what, we must be doing all right, Harry. We're starting to get some A-listers. Oh, and all of our guests have been A-listers. Don't want to diminish anyone who's been on our show. We've had some very, very high caliber, and that continues with our special guest tonight, Mr. Jason Fisher. So I've got Jason's bio, which I'll just read out to you. So Jason is a writer from South Australia. He has received, amongst other things, I checked out his list of awards, and it's a massive list of awards on his website. But I guess pulling out some of the highlights, he's received a Starred Review and Publishers Weekly. He's won an Aurelius Award and the Writers of the Future Contest, and received the Colin Thiel Literature Scholarship. In Jason's jack of all trades writing career, he has written for television and the stage, as well as a variety of prose projects such as novels, role-playing games, and more. Jason also facilitates writing workshops, is an enthusiastic mentor, and loves anything to do with the written or spoken word. Jason is also the founder and CEO of Spectrum Writing, a service that teaches professional writing skills to people on the autism spectrum. And we will talk a lot more about that as we go on. But handing over to you, Jason, welcome. Thanks so much for coming on.
No worries. Thanks, Jack and Harry, for having me on board. It's a real pleasure to be here, of course, speaking to you fine gentlemen. And it was a privilege to meet and speak with Harry at GenreCon not so long ago. Now, I have to say that at some point, either during that convention or shortly thereafter, I caught COVID. So I'm hoping that...
it wasn't me. It wasn't me, honest.
Oh, very good. Well, I'm hoping you didn't end up with it at least. No. But yeah, it was a definite souvenir that my whole family took home from Queensland.
Harry, do you want to run us through? How did that little exchange go? I think you had like a bit of a fan moment with you've come up and waved some business cards.
Yeah, basically, I was under the strict instructions to try and get a few extra people on the podcast. So I would just, I saw you, and I thought you were running a panel, and it was very humorous. So I thought you'd worked very well on the podcast.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was, as an autistic person, I tend to think in segues, and I don't sort of follow the linear narrative at all. And if something's sort of fun and weird and strange, I'll generally bounce with it. And the panel that I ran had lots of audience participation and all sorts of craziness.
It so did, yeah, yes.
We had a lot of fun, which was good. But the other panel that I met you at, which was the one run by Kim Wilkins, we spoke about your genre that you're working on to do with fiction, which is super cool, and I want to dig into that for a minute. I know I'm a guest.
Go for it.
I want to talk about your writing, Harry, because of course everything that is to do with some sort of occupational job or whatever is inherently interesting. Even down to Dick Francis and all of his stories about horse racing and everything back in the day. And you wouldn't think that he'd be able to carry that on for 10,000 books, but he managed it. It was like every single book was something to do with horses and horse racing and scumbags and whatever. And it was just...
Some of it was a little tenuous at times, though. You know, it was like a picture of a horse or something like that. You know, a painting of a horse gets stolen. And that's the only horse-related thing. But, there was a lot of horse racing stuff in there.
Yeah, I remember it was at one point, every time you'd go to a bed and breakfast somewhere or a caravan park or wherever there were, where there's some sort of ancient book library, there'd be a Dick Francis book kind of... in there somewhere. I love the things, like they're crazy.
Yeah, I grew up on them. Yeah, they were great. I mean, they're obviously most of them are crime related, and it was fun. Just mostly, it was just a good story. But I think we also should make a nod to his wife, because I suspect that she had a lot more to do with the with the writing than was actually acknowledged.
Yeah, I think that's true for most of us. Our long-suffering partners tend to keep us on the straight and narrow more often than not. Yeah, I suspect that you might be onto something with your paramedic staff.
Well, yeah, I think the discussion went was that I think we were trying to come up with a genre for my writing, because I said it was paramedic procedurals, because, you know, it was dark humor, but mainly it's about the way that paramedics work and how we sort of roll and the, you know, sort of the interaction between paramedics in the cab and the chat and the dark humor. So, but I think, what did you come up with as a genre?
Parapunk.
Parapunk.
Team medics, or I don't know.
Because it's such a different approach, you know, coming, I mean, it's, I guess you could still say it's traditional crime writing that you're doing, Harry, but coming yeah. from the point of view where your protagonist is a paramedic, and that is different.
Yeah, I think there was Catherine Howell was an AMBO who, well, I think she quit as an AMBO and then started writing. And she wrote, I think, 8 novels that were, she said, I had a chat with her and she'd said she couldn't work out how to have a protagonist who kept things happening to them that would be book worthy, you know. And so she did it as a, her protagonist was a female detective, but each one, she did the sort of Dick Francis thing that each book had something relating to paramedics and AMBOs and stuff like that. And I decided that I could tweak it. I could manage to get 5 books out of my character, but basically what happens each time to him bleeds onto the next book. And so something that happened in the first book causes the second book and so forth. So it is a bit, though, I can't push it too much, because it just ends up being more a Die Hard, you know, and how can all of this happen to the same guy? It's, you know, at some point you've got to draw a line.
Yeah, the first movie was great. Then, you know, just launching cars at helicopters. It was
garbage. Yeah.
It's like, okay, we get it. You're a tough cop. But I think that's an interesting idea of first responders having a lot of agency as protagonists, and reasons for being at a place where something, you know, quite intersectional is happening in that story, because it is, you know, this is the worst moment of possibly of somebody's life, is that, you know, they're in an emergency and something's gone wrong, and this person comes in and enters their life, a stranger, if you will, comes in and engages with whatever the plot is then going to unfold with. It's really, really, yeah, it's a good way of bringing, you know, a person in. And you're particularly, if it's a person who's not your typical detective style, where it's like, okay, I'm going to solve this problem because of the law and, you know, all of the trope and kind of stuff, but it could be like, I'm here because I want to heal people. It's just, you know, sense of honor and wanting to help people, and you know, a different approach to sort of untangling someone else's problem. I think it's very cool. More power to you. I will have to try and get hold of the book, Harry.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can sort that out for you.
brilliant. I do love, I'm going through a bit of a like thriller kind of espionage jag at the moment. I tried to get into romantasy recently. It was just, I couldn't, it's not for me. a lot of people love it, and you know, it is a valid genre and all the rest of it. It's just not my bag. But yeah, gave it a go. I could see all of the plot parts and where they hang, and you know, examine how these stories are put together and all the rest of it. But it's, you know, I think you do a disservice to your readers if you try to be like, I'm going to write the next hottest thing because market reasons. You know, you're not being genuine to yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's probably a good segue to a question I wanted to ask, and I might as well ask it now. I think one of the panels that I sat in that I watched you, Jason, at GenreCon, the Queensland Writers' Centre conference, there was conversations around speculative fiction. I think that was the topic of the discussion, where trying to define what is speculative fiction. I think a lot of us are always kind of confused by that. And I kind of remember you saying something like, well, I kind of, I don't know, I just kind of write what, you know, what I feel I need to write. And whether it's a mix of fantasy or dystopian or science fiction, any of those things. I remember you saying, look, any of those things could probably be interpreted as speculative fiction. So is that kind of your happy place in terms of genre?
Very, very much so. It's a broad umbrella, speculative fiction. You don't hear the term much these days, but it does cover all of your classic kind of genre stuff to do with the fantastic and the strange and the wonderful. And it's it's pretty much every genre thing except for crime and romance, I think. it's like your fantasy, your science fiction, your horror, the weird. All of that, where there's just an element of the strange, the unusual, the supernatural, the fantastic, the yet to be invented.
Sorry to interrupt, whether that's in the real world or in a off world and an invented world, I mean, it could kind of sit in either place.
Yeah, it's the genre of wonder. And I mean, the root of the word is speculate, but we're speculating on something that is not. Whereas we know that romance is real, we know that police are real and crime is real. We know those things are concretely defined genres. But the moment we are speculating on something that isn't a thing, that's where we start to go somewhere weird and interesting. And it's all those what if questions that you really stretch the what if when you play in that genre. And I love it. I love it for that reason. I do love playing around with crime and thriller kind of stuff for write for hire projects and things that I've done in the past. But I always, for my own passion projects, like to go to the weird and the wonderful. And I think part of that is the just the mind wall gathering and wandering off to do something. And it's a very much an autism ADHD thing where it's like, oh, shiny things, and one goes off the
squirrel. Shiny things.
In my instance, I managed to weaponize that. It's a good thing when you can pull that off. So, it's just.
I think you could do crime with speculative fiction. I mean, things like Jumper, where the guy could jump to wherever he saw or where things he saw, but he stole stuff. So,
That was Hayden Christensen, wasn't it?
So, I mean, he wasn't the nicest chap, and he was stealing everything that he saw, took whatever he wanted, So, I guess there is a crime element potential for speculative fiction.
You can like a crime procedural in just about anything. I mean, Discworld, crime procedurals there. Bright, which was that movie with Will Smith, and it's basically Shadowrun.
It's got aliens in it. Aliens are now coming and they live on Earth, and they've now integrated into the population, and one of the aliens is a police officer. Yeah, that's a really cool spin on things.
That's a good mix and match of all sorts of things. And of course, romance is one of the seven basic plots. If you really want to dig into, I don't know if either of you have heard of Christopher Plummer's The Seven Basic Plots. This thing is a book on the order of War and Peace. It is a brick book. And he posits that you only really have the seven basic plots, which is some people agree and disagree. But of course, one of those is comedy, meaning the romantic comedy, which is the Greek theatrical tradition of comedy, which is that, something is not right and, people are not in their natural position in the universe, and things won't be correct until everyone's where they're meant to be, so that mode of storytelling doesn't have a lot of difference from romantic comedy movies. They kept the same thing going since the ancient Greeks. And, and basically that's the plot, and I've got it on the wall, is that there is only one plot. Things are not as what they seem. That is, again, another thing that, we can hang all sorts of genre trappings on these tropes and plots and ideas, and they ultimately, you can have lots of fun and just pull random bits out and mush them together and make a story out of just about anything. And that's one of the things we do with our spectrum writing participants is we lean into that strength of their neurology, and we say, okay, like, you're really good at drawing points between disparate junctions. let's connect some just random crap and see what you come up with. And they're just amazing. Like they can do it. It's like, and I think we've trained them now to find those points really quickly. Because, you know, anytime you look at a bunch of just random things, you can MacGyver it together into a story really, really easily. So yeah, I've got a few games and things that we run here for at Spectrum Writing for those outcomes. Yeah, it's definitely, and this is another thing I tend to ramble and meander.
oh, don't worry, we do. No, that's fine. That's all
actually,
good.
I did have a question. So
Jack doesn't.
What
he likes structure.
Yeah, that's my personality type. Very structured, very process driven. I think that's why we complement each other so well. Jason, would it be fair to say, is it the escapism that draws you back to this kind of mix of blend of fantasy, dystopian, sci-fi, plus just, as you said, the fun of coming up with stories in a whole mix of sort of locations and environments?
Absolutely. Escapism, big part of it. Because, you know, as a neurodivergent person, sometimes the standard world ain't real great. And, you know, a lot of us and a lot of the people that we've encountered at the service here, we, you know, struggle to engage. And sometimes, and, you know, it goes for anyone really, escapism in this world is a necessity. You know, we absolutely need to, you know, lean into those, you know, it's a natural human expression. And, you know, we all do it. And we saw this at COVID especially, is that the first thing everyone reached for was the toilet paper. Mm-hmm. And the second thing that everyone reached for was stories, whether it was TV, or, you know, binging TV shows or books or whatever. It's such a natural thing that, and it's a shame that the arts are so undervalued, because it's so central to our lives. We're storytellers, yeah. Have been, yeah. Since. It's how we make sense of the world. And particularly in, you know, my situation, it's one of the ways I've been able to make sense of my world, is to try and, you know, be like, okay, the normal way of things is scary and off-putting to me, so I'm going to try and frame my experiences in the fantastic and the weird and the wonderful and the larger-than-life characters and the humor and all of that stuff to try and, you know, escape. And I wasn't kind of reading a lot of the stories I wanted to read, so I didn't go into writing a lot of them. And, you know, as a frustrated forever dungeon master, I think that was a big part of it as well, that it'd be like, why aren't my players doing what I want them to? You end up writing the stories that I want to read instead.
Yeah. So, and I wanted to ask this question. I think this is a good time to ask it around. How did you get into the writing? You've kind of already sort of touched on that. And your reasons for writing. But I wanted to talk more specifically about your publishing journey, as, you know, moving from, you know, dabbling and playing with creative writing as a you know, a pleasure, to the point where you're thinking, okay, I could possibly make a career out of this, or I could have some success. So just in terms, like, particularly for any sort of emergent writers who are listening, they're always interested to hear how successful authors have got into the publishing world and what their journey was. So can you just quickly run us through what was your journey to publication?
Yeah, firstly, if I meet a successful writer, I'll let you know. my own journey into, and, you know, I'm still hungry and I'm still wanting to, like, do things, and it's never going to stop. You know, you get the bug for life. If you've got the bug, you know you've got the bug, because you never stop. But my own journey started right when I was a young lad. I've been telling stories and things pretty much since forever, and writing funny poems and putting together little chapbooks for school, and, you know, right since primary school, I've been putting together stories or telling stories for my friends. And, you know, infamously, when I was a wee tacker with my cousins, I was the one who was able to scare everyone stupid with the stories by torchlight. So, you know, on one particular scout trip, we were telling stories, and I think one of the kids actually had to get taken home early by his parents. He was too scared. So I think that was, you know, a good indicator that I could probably tell horror fiction.
That sounds like me telling my paramedic stories. I suddenly get all of these blank faces and go, oh, crap. I'm not talking to paramedics.
I hope that boy's recovered. Yeah, I have a touch base to make sure he's is he coping okay in life? Is he not too traumatized by that experience?
It's like they put what where? But yeah, in terms of my own journey as an author, I started off doing all of that kind of stuff. Did a lot of poetry and theater and stage plays and stuff in high school. And then afterwards, dubbed poems and did some song lyrics for friends. And you know, always enjoyed reading fantasy and doing the Dungeons and Dragons stuff, and did a few short stories in high school. But it was sort of wasn't until later years that I really sort of drilled into that in my early 20s and started off writing flash fiction. So that's probably my best recommendation for anyone listening who is an emerging author, is don't hit it trying to do the big fantasy trilogy. You will fall over hard. you don't have the craft yet. You don't have the patience or the discipline to pull it off. Do yourself a favor and begin small. It's like any discipline, begin small. So flash fiction, of course, is very, very short fiction, 400 to 500 to 1,000 words or thereabouts. Something you could probably read in person in a few minutes. So it is the classic sort of short story. And there are plenty of markets for this stuff. And that's sort of where I got started, was writing flash fiction for quite a few places. And I did that for a while. And then I got the hunger for, you know, trying bigger and better, and you know, starting to actually get paid for this as well. A few places gave me small amounts of money for this, and that sort of spurred me onto bigger and better things. And I was lucky enough to go to Clarion South, which was through the Queensland Writers' Centre many, many years ago. They put these workshops together. Desperately hope they get resurrected again one day, because they were brilliant. The workshops were intensive 6-week workshops at the Griffith University, where I think there was 18 of us. It was like a lot of people. We all every day just read and eviscerated each other's stories and wrote more stories, read, eviscerated them. And by the end of that, you are so immune to feedback and criticism and stuff. You know that it's not personal. It's about making the story better. And it's probably the best thing you could do. And at that point, I was significantly spurred on to work in sort of longer form short stories. But in the middle of that, I had some arts grants to write some terrible fantasy novels, which is why I'm telling people don't do that first. one of my novels, which I ended up translating into a novella, which got me an Aurealis Award, was about telepathic elephants that have enslaved humankind. And it was basically some sort of odd mix of Lord of the Rings and Gladiator, and it had mad elephants in it that wore like armor and stuff. I managed to dissect a decent novella out of that idea. got an Aurealis Award, which was nice. But yeah, it's you don't dive into the big ideas till you know what you're doing, or you fall over. So once you've got a few of those in, just grow what you're doing. Look at the things that are out there. Enter writing contests. These are a really good metric for how you're going, is that if you've got the most stories out under submission that you can, you're doing okay, because that's all you're in control of, is writing, editing, and submitting. And everything else is largely out of your hands. All you can do is be an active story writer, actively work on polishing your work and actively submit it, and just turn it over. It's a numbers game. If you can live that life and not give up, you'll succeed. And there's other things now. There's a lot of self-publishing opportunities and things that weren't around when I was getting started. It's a lot easier in that front. After all of that stuff, I got into a lot of write-for-hire work. And one of those write-for-hire opportunities led me towards writing my first series of zombie novellas. Now, these things ended up in newsagents around the country, and they were sort of, if I was lucky, they got shelved next to the Western softcover things. And if I was unlucky, they got put next to, like, Archie and, Garfield and the Phantom. I didn't know what to do with them. And so I wrote this book by stealth, all these zombie novellas that ended up sort of connecting together. And, I'm on the third big novel in that series at this point. And then I ended up writing a series of dark fantasy books. I guess I can wave some of these in front of the camera. I'm not sure if your podcast is audio only or if you...
We can do little video screenshots and little clips. So, definitely.
I can see. pictures to you as well. So yeah, this is Quiver, which was, this is about the fourth different cover this book's had. It's been out since 2009. It's had four different covers now. This is the most recent one. I was going to say
the one on your website's not like that.
No, that's the third one. It's gone through many, many different iterations.
What is that?
So the first one was owned by a publisher who's gone out of business now. Black House Comics was an amazing guy. Baden, who ran that, he gave a lot of comics publishers their first opportunity. And he pushed this thing and said, I want to get into prose publishing now. And he actually was his own printer. So it's just a happy accident of being in the right place at the right time. And he just pushed these magazines out for zombie fiction because he's right into it. And so he backed the thing. And, you know, we ended up having great times with big book launches. The first cover went out. Then he allowed me to pick a different cover because I didn't like the first cover. Then I got the rights back to that book many years later, did our own cover, and then my publisher in the US bought the American rights to that book, and now they've done their own cover. So yeah, it's you have a lot of fun. I couldn't draw a stick figure to save my life, so to have input into the artwork is really, really lovely. So that was fun. Other stuff that I got into in recent years, I worked on this book that was from a series of short stories I did for the Aurealis magazine. And this was the dark fantasy series around this character, very loosely based homage to Stephen King's The Dark Tower, as well as a lot of other things that I'm into, like Mad Max and, you know, Terry Dowling's Rhinoceros books and, you know, all of those things that I just jammed everything that I loved into one series, and it's sort of a very loose homage of all of that stuff. And so it was a series of short stories in this world. It was kind of Australia, but kind of not. And the stories did really well, and they got republished in the Year's Best anthologies, and you know, there was a lot of regard for them. So I said, all right, it's time to write a book in this world. And so I got an arts grant to write this book based on the strength of the early chapters, worked on that. It did really well. I finished this book, and it ended up being Papa Lucy and the Bone Man. She's here. Now, this got shortlisted for just about every award. It got a starred review in Publishers Weekly. It did really well. It sold out its first print run. But on the road to publishing, it was a very long, long way. From writing the words, the end, to having it appear in print, that was a full decade.
Wow.
If you are an emerging writer, this can happen. It sucks. You have to be patient.
What was your first kind of publishing offer that you kind of think that you thought to yourself, okay, this is kind of my foot in the door to the industry? Was there a particular moment where you signed with the publisher and you thought, okay, this is the good starting point?
It was probably the zombie novellas that ended up becoming the book. That was sort of where I was like, excellent. And you know, each thing leads to the other thing. And that's the thing as a writer, is that all of your things will lead to other things. So even if you think something at the time is, you know, it fell through or it's a wasted opportunity, be professional and be polite, and you know, don't, you know, if someone says, sorry, this isn't gonna work or whatever, don't slap them across the face, because you might need to be friendly with them later. They might have another opportunity for you down the track. And everything connects. It's a wonderful world, publishing. And so, you know, this is why we do it. You know, you end up finding homes for just about everything if you're patient enough. The problem with my book was it was so just weird in terms of genre that no one knew what to do with it. It got right through to the final hurdle at HarperCollins. And it got to the final bit before they were like, are we publishing it? Yes or no. And I think it was a choice between my book and the Books of Babel series.
Right.
And another book, and both mine and the Books of Babel got bounced. And it was just like brutal. You know, of course, those books went on to another publisher, and they're great series if you haven't read them. Where it's a fella that goes to the Tower of Babel with his wife, and they get separated, and it's crazy. And it took many years from that, and I got my book accepted by another publisher. At which point I was like, this is great, this is really good. And then that publisher folded about a month later after the announcement of the thing, and it was just like, this book is definitely cursed. I can't remove this thing. And I forgot about it. I just went on and did other things. I had lots of other things on the go. I was working on other books, short stories, novellas, all my other bits and pieces. I have, the key is just to keep busy and you'll never be disappointed. And then out of the blue, many years after this, the reader who was at HarperCollins at the time got in contact with me, and she said, I remembered your book from way back when. Have you found a home for it yet? And I said, well, no, I haven't. And she goes, because I was the one who championed it, and it got like to the final hurdle, and it kills me that it didn't get through. Anyway, I'm an agent now. Would you let me represent your book? And so it was just a happy accident that she remembered me years later, grabbed the book and shopped it around, and we ended up finding a really good home for it. So this was Outland Entertainment, who they are doing the trilogy of books in that series. But they're a transmedia publisher, which means they do comics and games and all sorts of things. And I said to my agent at the time, tell them I'll do an RPG as well if it'll sweeten the joking. And they said, yes, we want to do an RPG in that world. And so I said, all right. So the RPG,
you're gonna have to explain an RPG.
So this is a role-playing game, much like Dungeons and Dragons. So this is not only did I get to write the series of books that I loved and the passion of this sort of weird, dark, pseudo 1970s Australia that isn't quite the same. And this is a world where you can ride around on 10-foot tall cassowaries that can mimic human speech. there are bleed throughs where items from the dead world come through into this world. And so, you know, you dig and you might dig up a car. You might dig up a record player with some ABBA albums. You might find some AC/DC. You might find a fridge full of, VB. It is ridiculous. It is such a wacky setting. But the game itself, which is very loosely based on the Dungeons & Dragons rule set, and it was my first foray into game writing, it's, very, very good fun because you can... So I told a story, and then I've given people the rules to play characters in my world, which was so cool.
Yeah.
It is just so much fun. And the best thing about this publisher is they've given me like complete creative input into the covers, the designs. This does not always happen. So they're not a big publisher, but they're just like beautiful to work with because they let me have input on the art, the maps, everything. So it's really, really good fun.
And sorry, just one question. So with your, probably two questions with your publishers, are they overseas based or Australian based? And are you finding now that you're working more with publishers who are kind of niche publishers who really focus on, you know, your particular brand of writing, that they really champion that style of writing?
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing about being an author is that, you know, regretfully not much happening in Australia. You do have to look overseas for reasonable success, and you know, I'm not successful by any means compared to some, but I found someone that would do the books the way I want to, and you know, they sell well, so it's good. They're based in Kansas City in the US. I've done some work as well for Aconite Books, and they're based in the UK, so that's for the Arkham Horror series. So that's Cthulhu, you know, weird tentacles in the night, 1920s kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's been fun as well. So I don't really have like a publisher. I just have lots of opportunities, which is good. And I'm also my own small press. So I run a small press with another friend, Jason Franks, and we formed Argonautica Press. So we do a lot of our backlist titles and odds and sods. And yeah, it's good fun there. But yeah, it's whatever way that you want to tell your story, there is a way of doing it. If you're patient and persevere, you'll find your audience and get your story to them, however that is. It might take you 10 years to find a home for that book. Don't give up.
This was my get rich quick scheme, which didn't work out.
I know.
So I've only been writing now for 12 years, you know, and I still haven't got rich from it. just breaking even is nice.
And it certainly wasn't quick.
No.
No, it's I mean, that's the thing, is that it's a natural human expression. I guess it's like painting. It's probably a good comparison, is that there are people out there that paint for the love of it. And there's nothing wrong with writing for the love of it as well. There's also, you know, people that desperately want to like sell their paintings and make a name for themselves. And there's sort of like a pretty direct comparison you could make there. To people seeking professional publication, and it's a mug's game. It's very, very hard, but you know, it's worth it. You know, it's just the thrill of the chase, getting those letters saying yes, we do want to publish your thing. That's an amazing feeling. But also like finding people like that have read your stuff that write to you and say, like, you know, your work really helped me through a time. You know, that's an amazing thing as well. And